We live in a world where everyone loves statistics and everyone wants to be rated. We see this in the newspapers, where if a person goes to the movies or wants to read a good book, all you have to do is see if it's on the top 40, the top 10. Would you believe that most recently in Newsweek, on April 2nd of 2007, they began rating rabbis? That's right, the top 50 rabbis in America. And who are these individuals that took upon themselves this daunting task? Probably highly qualified rabbis themselves to be able to truly understand what it entails to be a great rabbi. Well, I guess that's not exactly who was chosen for this lofty task. Rather, we have the Sony Pictures CEO and chairman, Michael Linton, a power broker by the name of Gary Ginsburg of News Corp, and Jay Sanderson of JTN Productions. They used a very novel pointing system to be able to determine who, in fact, should be number one. And unfortunately for myself, I'm not anywhere on this top 50 list. But as we say on Pesach, L'shana haba, perhaps better luck next year. And going through this list, it's very interesting, some of their choices. At number 4, we have Yehuda Berg. Berg, who has made wearing the red string a popular phenomenon in America and around the world, and turned on everyone from Madonna to club-hopping young Jews to the power of the Kabbalah. He's an author and spiritual advisor at the Kabbalah Center. Yehuda Berg rates and ranks number 4. Rabbi Zalman Teitelbaum makes number 15 on the list as the new leader of the Satmar Hasidic community in Williamsburg, just barely beating out Sharon Kleinbaum, who was the senior rabbi of the world's largest synagogue for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Jews. Rabbi Avi Weiss did make the list at 25, and barely making the list at 44 is Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, the Rosh Yeshiva and Chancellor of the esteemed Yeshiva University. Whether or not you agree to this list, it certainly got me to begin thinking. If we're able to rate the top 50 rabbis in America, let's today rate the top rabbis in our Haggadah. Perhaps you would put on the top of your list Rabbi Gamliel. After all, he's the one that taught us that we need to learn and speak about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror to fulfill our Seder obligation. Maybe you would choose Hillel. After all, inventing the sandwich, making everyone's lunch complete. But I choose neither Rabbi Gamliel nor Hillel. Rather, I choose at the very top of my list the great Rabbi Akiva. And the reason for this is based on a couple of passages in the Talmud. The Gemara discusses in Tractate Psachim how we should conduct the Seder, and more specifically, the end of Magid in our Haggadah. We know that before we drink the second cup of wine, we say the bracha of Goel Yisrael. Says the Gemara in Arvei Psachim, a dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and, yes, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tarfon says that we should only say, Asher Golanu v'Goalas Avoseinu Mimitzrayim, that we were redeemed and freed from being slaves in Egypt. And there he would end. Rabbi Akiva, who in fact we hold like as we see in our Haggadot, he would say, Kein Hashem Elokeinu v'Kevoteinu, Yegienu l'Moadim v'Regalim Acherim Habaim, so too, as Hashem took us out of that exile, of that slavery, Hashem in the future will also bring us to other days of joy. L'kraseinu l'shalom, sameichim b'vinyan irecha, v'sasim b'avodasecha, v'nochal sham min ha'psachim u'min ha'zvachim. That we there will be able to greet and serve Hashem in peace, with tremendous joy, in the building of the temple, and the building of the city of Yerushalayim, to be able to serve Hashem properly with bringing the various offerings of the Psachim and the Zvachim. We look at this dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. It's not just a machloket between a few different words, but rather a fundamental principle in Jewish philosophy. According to Rabbi Tarfon, he focuses only on the past, that Hashem took us out from Mitzrayim. And Rabbi Tarfon, stopping at the past, does not look in the future, does not look at the present or what will be for the Jews. But Rabbi Akiva tells us that there is more than just the past. Geula is also the future, for future redemptions as well. For one cannot live in the past, but rather one must instead cast their eyes toward a more promising tomorrow. What's most unusual is when Rabbi Akiva lived. He did not live in the days in which the Beis HaMikdash stood, but rather after the Chorban, the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash in 70 CE by the Romans. And the Talmud, at the very end of Makot, tells us an unbelievable story about he, Rabbi Akiva, and the other great sages. That they were walking in Yerushalayim, and they were walking by the place in which the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, stood. They saw a fox, animals, roaming wildly where the Holy of Holies, where the great Aaron, where the cherubs stood. Naturally, all the people that witnessed this place of tremendous splendor and glory, in complete utter ruins, could only cry. Rabbi Akiva Masachik says the Talmud that Rabbi Akiva began to laugh. He was smiling as though he was rejoicing to see the destruction of the temple. And this bothered the rabbis so much, and they asked, Rabbi Akiva, Mipnei ma'ata misachek, what are you doing? How could you be laughing at a time like this? And he turned it right back and said, what do you mean? Mipnei ma'atem boichem, why are you crying? Why are you so upset? Why are you sad? They said, why are we sad? You know this place, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in which the Torah says, V'hazar ha-karev yumat, if even a non-Kohen would enter such a holy, sanctified place, they would die. Now what do we see? Foxes, wild animals roaming wildly in this area. Should we not cry? And Rabbi Akiva looked at them in the eyes without skipping a beat and said, that is precisely the reason why I laugh, why I rejoice today. And he proceeds to explain that there were two prophecies, and those two prophecies were dependent on one another. One represents the complete destruction which is before them, and the other of its being rebuilt. Says Rabbi Akiva, once I now see that the first prophecy, in which these two are directly connected to one another, once I see that this prophecy, in fact, was completely done, b'yaduah shenebuwaso shel Zechariah miskayemes, I now know also that the other prophecy of Zechariah will also endure. And on this they turned to Rabbi Akiva and they said, Akiva, in fact, you have given us nechama, you have consoled us in this time of distress." This was Rabbi Akiva, the eternal optimist, who was always able to focus not on the negativity and harping on the past, but looking through a different lens, the lens of a better tomorrow. What's most amazing is we're now entering the time in which we begin to count Sfirat Omer, counting for 7 weeks in anticipation for Matan Torah, the holiday of Shavuos. But yet, this days of Simcha, of rejoicing, is also tempered with a velus, with certain degrees of mourning. And our sages tell us that the reason we mourn is because Rabbi Akiva's students, 24,000 of his Talmidim, tragically perished between Pesach and Shavuos, which is unbelievable. If we mourn, we don't cut our hair, we don't get married, but imagine for a moment, if you were Rabbi Akiva, you put in your heart and soul, everything that you had, to these 24,000 students. In the blink of an eye, they all die a tragic death. Most of us would say, "I cannot move on. Let me retire. Let me harp on this terrible event and be depressed and have no future." Did Rabbi Akiva do that? No. Instead, he started all over again. He focused on the future. And he had 5 new students. And those 5 Talmidim were among the greatest scholars in Jewish history. So although Sfiras Omer, in fact, is a time of avelus, it is also an opportunity for us to be inspired by Rabbi Akiva, to realize that just as we count from Pesach to Shavuos, that we're looking forward, we're moving ahead at a greater future, a time in which we'll grow spiritually, so too the tragedies and events that have taken its toll on our lives, and maybe tremendous challenges. Rabbi Akiva is telling us, do not focus on those negativities, because then you will not be able to function in the present and in the future. Our Haggadah tells us that we have an obligation, Bechol Dor V'Dor, Chayev Adam Liros Es Atzmo K'il Hu Yatzme Mitzrayim. We have to envision as though we left Mitzrayim, we left Egypt. For myself personally, it's a very difficult obligation that I have every year. After all, I never left Egypt. I was never a slave. After all, I live in the United States. Not only that, I never even visited Egypt in my entire life. What exactly does this mean? And furthermore, in our Shemoneh Esrei, we call Pesach, among its names, Zman Cheruseinu, a time of our freedom. How do I really appreciate this idea of Cherus and the idea of Avdus? We know in our lives that Avdus, being enslaved, does not necessarily mean you have a taskmaster, you have a king, a pharaoh, telling you to do things and build pyramids. We are avadim. We are enslaved sometimes to our past. On an extreme, that could refer to deadly addictions. That because we are connected to those addictions of our past, we allow that to affect our present and our future. That is avdus. We are enslaved to our desires, to our yetzer hara, to a certain negative way of thinking about ourselves and our lack of self-esteem and self-actualization. The message of Bechol Dor V'Dor is that we have to disconnect ourselves from the negativity of our past, certainly to learn from history so it should not repeat itself, but not to focus and harp on the past. But rather, a person like Rabbi Akiva must be able to disconnect and have a true Zman Cheruseinu, a true time of freedom. And by doing so, just like Rabbi Akiva, you too will be on the top 50. Good Yom Tov.